I'm going to talk in a second about how do you prevent these liabilities, but I want to say a little bit first about how do these arise. So where are these liabilities going to come from? I mean, one way is from the IRS. So the IRS can audit you and say you've engaged in, you have all these taxable expenditures, and your board was approving grants to non-public charities and not exercising expenditure responsibility, and they knew that, and so we're going to impose a tax on your board of directors. It could be the state AG. The state AG could open an investigation, find related party transactions, and impose penalties on the directors for the related party transactions. And then it could be suits. So someone could sue you. They could bring direct or derivative suits. There's usually standing issues with respect to suits against charitable entities, so who has standing to sue them. But they do, you know, they do get through sometimes. And even if they don't, you can incur a lot of legal expenses trying to say that someone doesn't have standing. So that can take that can take years. You can defend a suit for years before it's dismissed for lack of standing. There's whistleblowers, so there could be a whistleblower. There's congressional investigations where you can incur significant legal fees if Congress hauls you up in front of them to defend why you pay your executive director $4 million a year. So it can come up in lots of ways. So how do you prevent against some of these things happening? And there's a lot, we've talked about a lot of these, but let's just go over some of them. So one is have the right policies in place. And this you really want, in place from day one. So you want a conflict of interest policy, and you want a conflict of interest policy that you review annually and where your directors and officers disclose annually what their conflicts are. That requires recusal from any conflict transactions to be approved. That states the standard for approving a conflict transaction and that prohibits self-dealing for private foundations. An investment policy that complies with UPMIFA, and this is really useful because if you have an investment policy that complies with UPMIFA and then you delegate your investment management function, you can just make that delegation subject to your own investment policy, and then you have transferred the liability of complying with UPMIFA to your investment manager. But if you don't have all of that built into your investment policy, then you're still on the hook for making sure that you comply with UPMIFA. A whistleblower policy, which will, allow these things. We just talked about it in the last session, so I won't talk about it in detail, but allows these things to come up internally. A document retention policy, and then you may also consider a grants policy. And a grants policy can be important because it really defines who has the power to make grants from your organization. So take, for example, an organization, grant-making entity, where the executive director has the power to make grants on their own authority. And if you don't have a grant policy that formally delegates that and puts limits on that delegation, so you can make grants, but you have to comply with 4945, and you can't make grants for lobbying, and you can't make grants for political campaign activity, and the executive director starts doing all of that without a policy, then the board hasn't appropriately overseen that grant-making activity. So board practices is a really good way to prevent the imposition of liability at the board level. All the directors should familiarize themselves with the articles, mission, bylaws, and other organizational documents. That should be given to every new director. Every time there's a new director, all of that information should be provided to them, if not gone over with them. Hold and attend regular board meetings. I know lots of organizations don't do this. So, most states allow you to do unanimous written consents. So to take action by email or by writing, or to hold meetings by conference call, both of which are fine, but it's really a good idea to have some in-person meetings at least sometimes, where you can all sit around a table and discuss things. Everyone's not, shopping on Amazon at the same time that they have their conference call on or whatever. everyone should be informed and prepared for board meetings. So information should go out before the board meeting. People should be expected to look at it. And then you can talk about it in a meaningful way at the meeting where everyone's not trying to like flip through this memo at the same time that you're trying to talk about it. Review all materials and reports, participate in board discussions, inquire and request additional information where appropriate. So if there's a question or if you get into a discussion and someone says, you know, what does our legal counsel say? What does our investment manager say? You know, go back and get that additional information. You should, it should be easy for your board members to ask for more information. Exercise reasonable oversight of officers and staff and review performance regularly. So if you have delegated authority to your executive director, your president, whoever it is, they should be reporting to you regularly.